Support for WPR comes from Present Music, performing honest music with guest violist and curator Nadia Sirota, May 9th at 8 at the Milwaukee Art Museum. Tickets and info are at presentmusic.org.
Well, if you go to a gym or a health club, you probably noticed a lot more people there than usual here after the first of the year. Lots of people made commitments to get in shape for the new year. But even though they may have the best of intentions and motivations, they may be risking some injury if they're not careful. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Physical therapists Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody have some great advice on how to keep those resolutions and, even more importantly, how to stay safe while you do it. And they also have some important information for all of us to enjoy those winter sports as well. And maybe you've been taking up some activities this winter. We can talk about that. We can talk about the aches and pains you might have as well. They're happy to answer your questions when you phone in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And Lori, great to see you again.
It is good to be here on a sunny Monday.
Yeah, Bill, great to see you as well.
Happy New Year to everybody.
Yeah, and it even works better when I have your microphone on. Now we've got it working.
It is Monday.
Good morning, everyone.
Yes.
Happy New Year.
Yep.
Well, we've got a whole lot of us making resolutions.
Oh, yeah. You know, Mondays are the busiest day of the week at health clubs, and January is probably the busiest month of the year because everyone has great intentions. You know, some of the advice I'd give would be to be careful not to overdo it, because if you make yourself sore, if you flare up a latent knee problem or shoulder problem or neck problem, then you're reluctant to go back. You're a little anxious to go back because you remember the pain that you had. So it's better to start off a little bit easier and slower and work your way into it and make it part of your lifestyle, and you're more likely to stick with it in the long run.
Yeah. And tied to that, just setting reasonable goals. You know, if you have someone who hasn't been doing anything and they say, I'm going to go 7 days a week, well, that's a good goal, but it really isn't reasonable. And like Lori said, you don't want to set yourself up for failure in a couple of weeks or a month and you're not doing anything again. And that's the trick, getting it into the routine.
Right. And we think of exercise in the big picture in terms of frequency, that is, how often do you do it, the intensity, how hard is it, and the duration, how long are you exercising, 30 minutes, 60 minutes, whatever. And it requires a balance of all three of those factors. And so, you know, people often think of it only in terms of how often I go to the gym, but you really have to factor in intensity and duration as well. And so getting somebody to help guide you to get the right balance for you is the right way to go, because what's right for you may not be right for the person on the Stairmaster next to you.
Yeah. And if and also the frequency, I mean, does a person go a couple times a week or every other day, or is there anything?
Well, the American College of Sports Medicine says 4 to 5 days a week for 25 to 30 minutes. That includes some aerobic activity and some strength training, and for elderly people, some balance training. So, you know, those are the guidelines, but that's not where you start. You don't start out necessarily at 4 to 5 days a week. You may start out at 3 days a week to give yourself a full 48 hours to recover before you go back into it. And you may end up doing a hard day, easy day kind of model to start out with, instead of, you know, ramping it up a little bit every time you go. So you just have to think that you're in it for the long haul and you don't want to burn yourself out at the beginning.
Yeah, and most fitness centers have group classes, and you know, mixing in some group activity also can be helpful. You meet people, and you know, so there's a social component to it besides the physical component to it. And there's a wide variety of group classes that start out at relatively lower levels into much more advanced levels, and people can find the right niche for them.
Right.
Got a friend who's been doing it for going to the same place for years and years, and he goes at like really early in the morning, 5 or 5:30 in the morning, something like that. But there's a whole bunch of guys that go at the same time, and over time they've got to be friends, And there's the broadest range of people from a mail carrier, a physician, you know, guys that are in all different aspects. And they've even got now where they do some picnics together, family things together in the summer. And
That's really nice.
We see that in a variety of situations. I remember a group of women from the Natatorium who were in the programs that were started there that still remain friends. Yeah. Some of them have carried over to our facility. Some of the people have been in the same classes since our doors opened, I don't know, 17 years ago. And the one word of caution I would say about a group is if you come into an existing group, sometimes the tendency is to succumb to peer pressure. And if you see the person next to you who's been doing this for 14 years, doing a certain activity, you think, oh, well, I can do that too.
Because they make it look so easy.
Because they make it look so easy, right. But you may not be ready for that. A good instructor will give you strategies for this is how you make this exercise a little easier. This is how you make it a little harder to give people some options of what's right for them.
Very good advice. Janet in Madison has a question for the two of you. So let's go to her. Hi, Janet, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks. I actually work at a gym, and I can attest to your group of morning guys. I've seen those guys, the same group of guys year after year, and you're right, they develop these friendships. It's kind of fun to see. My question is, I am a group exercise instructor and a personal trainer, and I've had chronic Achilles tendonitis for over 15 years. I know about the icing, the stretching, trying to ease back into things. Maybe some of my extra personal activities might be trying to do some running. And the stupid thing just keeps coming back again and again, so I back off. And I'm just wondering, is there any hope for it ever being, quote, normal? And what's the latest advice with regard to Achilles tendonitis?
Well, there probably is hope, although the longer a tendonitis hangs around, the harder it is to get rid of because you get pathological changes in your tendon. But probably the latest research on tendinopathy, particularly Achilles tendinopathy, still points to some of the information we had 10 or 15 years ago, which is eccentric exercise, the lowering phase. Probably the part of it that may be new to some people is the intensity of that exercise, and that it has to be pretty intense and that it will probably hurt. And the pathology of it is the tendon tries to heal itself by bringing in a new blood supply called neovascularity. And with that new blood supply tends to run neurologic or pain fibers as well. The blood supply and the nerve supply tend to run together. So that's what gives you the pain. Even though it makes sense that a blood supply would be there to heal, in this tendon, it's actually not supposed to be there, and it's the source of the pathology and the pain. So the heavy loading eccentric actually destroys that neovascularity. The ultrasound research in this area shows that the people who are most successful and are pain-free returning to activity have obliteration of that neovascularity due to the heavy load eccentric exercise. So in a nutshell, that's the research. And if you haven't tried that, I would find a good physical therapist who can guide you through that process so you can understand what is the right amount of pain and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Is that something that right now I'm in the midst of a flare-up? Is that something I should wait till that calms down or begin that sort of thing?
I would go ahead and be evaluated by the PT to see if it's truly an isolated tendinopathy. In that case, you could put your finger right on it. So, A, it may be the time to start it because you can really isolate it. Or B, if you're in a really global flare and you have some bursitis associated with it and you have pain in a lot of different areas, it may not be the time. So there's not a yes or no answer to that. It requires a little more information.
Yeah. Janet, as long as you've had this, have you had anybody do a biomechanical assessment of your foot and ankle for orthotics and things like that?
No, I haven't.
Okay. You know, what Lori described is the best rehab for the tendon itself. And I know you've had it for a long time, but sometimes there's things you can alter the foot and ankle mechanics to decrease the load on the muscles and tendons that cross the foot and ankle area. So the eccentric exercise is designed to make change within the tendon, but what caused this in the first place?
Right.
And especially if there's a significant difference from one leg to the other leg, You know, sometimes a good pair of orthotics can help with the recovery and then certainly help keep it from returning again.
Okay.
So when you see the physical therapist, they should be examining your entire lower limb and including some core assessment as well, and you know, bring in shoes that you typically wear, because sometimes the wear pattern on the bottom of the shoe can give some clues about the foot and ankle mechanics.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Thank you very much.
Yeah. You bet.
Thanks, Jennifer, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, if you have a question for our guests today, physical therapist Lori Tynebrody and Bill Boisenault. Glad to have you join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show for that. And Bob and Menasha, you are next. Hi, Bob.
I'm calling about the issue with the orthotics I have for my shoes.
Okay.
I got them a little over 2 years ago because of a condition that somehow had the word rigid in it with my big toes. It had limited range of motion, and the cartilage was wearing away. And he said, in a couple of years, you might need surgery if that cartilage continues to wear away. And I'm wondering if that's what's happening now, that they bother me a bit more, or if I need, if typically you need new orthotics after 2 years, or what they think.
You just answered one of my first questions, and that is, are you becoming more symptomatic? So that would be one of the signs that perhaps your orthotics need to be replaced. And then taking your orthotics out and physically looking at them, are they looking worn down? Many times the orthotics come in a couple layers, and you can see if one of the layers is worn away, and you're seeing the second layer of material in there. But actually taking them out and physically looking at them to see if they look worn, you know, do they have the same give or resistance that they did when you originally got them? Then also, the other question to that would be, are your shoes in need of replacement? So the orthotic would be one piece of it, but the shoes that you put them in would be the second piece of it.
Yeah, I didn't go back to the podiatrist when I made a decision myself to put a rocker sole on the shoe, so the toe wouldn't bend very much.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that made a world of difference.
Great.
And I continue to have that replaced the same way.
Right.
So I saw there's two things, I guess.
Okay.
The orthotics were working, and then it was helping even more with the rocker sole.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure what, I guess I could go back to the podiatrist, but it's so expensive and I can't afford it.
Right.
And if he wants me to have more orthotics, last time they were $1,300.
Whoa.
Ooh.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's,
yow.
Yeah, that's pretty pricey.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm not sure where the orthotics came from, but if your orthotics are worn out and there's not a change in your prescription, the company should replace those for the less than $1,300. I have the same orthotics, and I probably shouldn't, full confession here, that I got when I was 20-something and I worked with a podiatrist. But when they wear out, I put them in a box along with the original prescription, and I mail it off to them, and for $15, they mail me a new orthotic.
Oh.
So I haven't changed my prescription. They just replaced the orthotic. So
yeah. So Bob, if you can get the prescription
From the podiatrist,
Yeah.
Okay.
And then contact the company and ask what it would cost with you having the prescription. That might be a good place to start.
Okay, because maybe I don't need a different prescription. I just
need to replace the orthotics. They may be worn.
Okay, well, that's great advice. I didn't know that I could possibly do that.
Yeah, yeah. Worth a try.
Yep.
Yes. Okay, thank you very much.
You bet. Yep.
Thanks, Bob. Okay. Thank you for calling. Well, he might have saved him a lot of money, or at least a lot of pain.
Right.
Yeah.
His foot could be changing, which means the orthotics won't make a difference. But if, you know, if he can get a new pair of orthotics for a relatively small amount of money, it's worth a try.
Certainly worth a try. Yeah. Marsha in Wauwatosa, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, I was just recently diagnosed with tears in the muscles or tendons that attach to my hips. And I'm going to have surgery to repair the tears, and I guess you do one after the other. And I just wondered what is all involved in the therapy or in the rehab. I understand it depends on the severity of the tear as to how long the rehab will take.
All right. Can I ask what caused the tears, Marsha?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I have no idea.
Okay, and when is the first procedure scheduled? When's your surgery scheduled for?
Supposedly in March.
Okay. All right. So coming, are you doing anything preoperatively right now for the muscle groups or around the hip or the core?
No, not right now, no.
Okay. All right. Well, now's a good time to get started on some exercises. I guess I would need to talk to the surgeon or somebody in the surgeon's office of what they don't want you to do. And
okay.
My guess is it's a fairly limited list of things that you shouldn't be doing. And then, again, seeing a physical therapist, even one visit, two visits should be enough to establish a home program. There may be some stretching you can do around the hip or the trunk, and certainly some core strengthening, and maybe some strengthening around the hip, maybe other muscle groups that will speed up the recovery process for you.
And there's quite a bit of time. If it's March, did you say March? Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, 6 weeks,
that's,
7 weeks.
That's right. That's right. So it's a lot of time that could help you postoperatively. And then in terms of the postoperative procedure, I mean, certainly there is some strengthening that will be done, but that's also very surgeon specific based on what they need to do and how much they need to do. So I would expect that the surgeon has a postoperative protocol that they will fit you into based on what they end up doing during the surgery.
And okay. Yeah, you might ask the surgeon ahead of time if there is that protocol, so you have some idea what the expectations are. Are they suturing tendon back down to bone? Do you know?
I believe so, but I'm really not certain.
Okay.
So I think
right.
so.
Okay. Because it would seem difficult to pull tendons completely away from bones in your hip and not know how
right.
that happened.
Right.
It was just diagnosed as a tear.
Mm-hmm.
So I have complete confidence in the surgeon.
Okay.
Yeah, good.
Well, then,
I think
yeah.
that my husband has, you know, people that I know have
sure.
had things done with him. So.
Well, then he probably has some sort of protocol that you could ask about so you have some idea what to expect postoperatively.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You bet.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Jill in Grafton, your turn. Hi, Jill.
Hi. About 8 months ago, I called in with an issue. I run, and about mile one and a half or so, my feet would fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And there were suggestions of orthotics or different types of insoles, and I did try that previous. And then you had mentioned getting those goofy-looking running sock things that people wear, those barefoot-type running
mm-hmm.
shoes, and I just could not handle wearing something that looked as ugly as that. So I tried other things, and I found that compression running socks was the cure for me. And tried a lot of different varieties and brands. I found that the Smart Mole running socks were
mm-hmm.
fantastic. So I don't know if anyone else out there has an issue with their feet falling asleep, but it's a real, it's a cheap try, and if it works, it's a cheap fix.
That's fantastic. So Smart Mole compression socks.
Yes, they're compression running socks is what I use. But I've also found that some of the cheaper brands, like even a style from Old Navy, even Champion running socks, Adidas, they do well as well.
Hmm. And are they ankle high or how high up do they go?
Yes, they're just the real
okay.
short, right below my ankle.
Okay.
Oh.
So, Jill, how quickly did you start noticing a positive change?
Probably that very next run.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Well,
fantastic.
And I had tried taping my foot before, but I just don't think I was getting the right areas and the right pressure on taping. And
mm-hmm.
And it's a no-brainer just to slip on the socks and go.
Right. Oh,
that
right.
is fantastic. What great feedback. Thank
yeah.
you.
Thank you so much. We are talking today with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault from the UW. Great to have them with us, and they're going to be with us right up until 12:30 today as we talk with them about keeping up with those fitness goals. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Well, nothing can ruin fun activities more than a sore back or painful muscles, and once a month we are fortunate to have folks with us who know a whole lot about staying in good shape and getting back in shape after an injury. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us. Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health and a Senior Physical Therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic of UW Hospitals and Clinic. And Bill, thank you for being with us today.
Pleasure, as always.
And Lori Tyne Brody is Physical Therapist and Athletic Trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And Lori, always great to have you along.
It's good to be here. Great to be here.
We have folks online who want to visit with you. The number to call, by the way, is 1-800-642-1234. We had an email talk@WPR.org from Lynn from Manitowoc, who said after exercising, especially with weights or on the Pilates reformer, I have noticed tingling in my hands or feet, and this could go off and on for a day or two afterwards. Wondering what this could be from. Would daily stretching help? Similarly, my friend has trouble on the elliptical and treadmill with her feet going numb. Thoughts on that?
Well, you know, the feet going numb, we just had that great call from Jill who tried the compression socks, and that worked for her. You know, sometimes it's a mechanical problem in your foot that is alleviated with an orthotic. Sometimes it's because your shoes are tied too tightly that can cause that. So there are a number of factors, and we usually have people play around with some different strategies to see if they can get that numbness to stop. So an orthotic, shoes, things like that. And as I said, the information we had from Jill, who tried a compression sock, that worked really well for her. In terms of the tingling for a day or two in her hands or feet afterwards, that's an unusual complaint. Sometimes you'll get tingling during that activity because you have some pressure on a nerve. You know, the first things that come to mind are her posture or position on it, where she's putting pressure or tension or overstretching a nerve. So she may need to work with the people at the gym to make sure she's doing things in the right posture. But even so, to have the tingling for a day or two afterwards would suggest a fair amount of stress to the nerves. I mean, typically it would be just during the training session and it would be fine afterwards. It's also possible that there's a more systemic problem. It could be coming centrally from her spine. It could also be a systemic problem such as diabetes, where she's starting to get some neuropathy issues. So it's a little hard to say with just this amount of information.
Yeah, I would agree. It's you can probably make a better case for her friend on the elliptical and the feet going tingling. Yeah. We've had callers in the past where their shoes were too tight or just it was too intense of a training program. But with weights on the Pilates reformer, again, I would agree with Lori. Kind of the three things she mentioned, either it has to do with the position she is in, the intensity of the weight itself, putting pressure on a nerve that's causing the tingling, or something with her neck potentially, or something more systemic. And so if she is, you know, I guess I would work with the Pilates folks first, have them take a look at her posture and positioning and maybe make some modifications if that doesn't change. And I'd go see her physician and describe what she's trying to deal with.
All right. Mark in Waukesha up next for us. Mark, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm a 51-year-old in pretty good condition and work out three times a week for 60 minutes, including 20 minutes of cardio and then 40 minutes of machine weight training. And recently, I've developed pain in the inside of my right elbow when I do the fly exercise. Now, I've laid off that for about a month now, iced it as it was occurring. I still feel a little bit, a tinge of pain occasionally in certain arm positions inside that right elbow. Obviously not time yet to go back to the fly or bicep machine. But give me some kind of feel for how long that might take to heal. At what point do I consider going and seeing somebody if I don't feel it's improving?
Does it bother you during any other activities besides the weight training?
No.
Okay.
I mean, occasionally during the day I'll hit a certain position. I go, oh, okay, that's still not quite right. But is it painful? Not really.
And can you put your finger on a spot on the inside of your elbow that hurts, or is it more diffuse?
It's pretty much right in the channel between where the joints, the bone joints meet on the inside of that channel, just kind of the tendon or that goes over that elbow.
A little bit in that channel, kind of right behind, that bump right behind?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, your ulnar nerve travels in there, so you know it's possible that you've irritated that nerve. There's also ligaments that attach there that provide stability to your elbow. Those are the ligaments that get stretched in baseball pitchers. So it could be that whatever position you were in, you were overstressing the soft tissue structures on the inside. So, you know, I would suggest holding off on things until you consistently have a couple weeks where you're not having symptoms on the inside of your elbow, and then gradually start back to those things that stressed it before, such as the bicep curls, but start at a pretty low level and just imagine that you are retraining tissues that have been injured and you want to build them back up. So you're going to have to start at a pretty low level and work your way up slowly and ending with the fly.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Thank you very much.
Yep, okay. Thanks a lot for calling. And Julia and Mequon, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. I had a surgery of my banyan, and the doctor convinced me that he would fix my hammer toe and claw toe. And so since then, and that was in 2008, I have shooting pain, numbness, tingling, and cramping. He did a fusion of the middle and distal phalanges of the fourth toe, and the fifth toe is loose. It might bend back if I don't hold it when putting on socks. It seems that the extension tendon was cut or damaged. It does not imprint on the floor when the foot is wet as I come out of the pool, for example. So I'm very frustrated with this. What can I do about this? As soon as I lay down in bed, my toes, those toes go numb and sometimes hurt, you know, enough to get up.
So have you seen somebody since that surgery in 2008 about this problem?
I have seen the same doctor about three or four times, and he claims no responsibility for the symptoms. The first time he said that, at 6 months later, he said that the toe was still swollen, and it would take time to recover. Then a year after that, it was still the same situation, and he said it had nothing to do with the surgery. And, you know, another thing is that I don't know how many pair of shoes I have because I'm not comfortable with any of them, but I can't tolerate them because the fourth toe where he put the pin is longer now and it doesn't fit around, you know, inside the shoe. Probably.
Oh my.
No.
You know, Julia, you have a very complicated problem. And it appears as though the person who did your surgery is not going to offer you anything else. That person appears to be just saying that there's nothing else that can be done. So I would seek another opinion from someone else who is a specialist in foot and ankle and get another opinion, someone who can do an objective evaluation of your foot, who, you know, didn't have any connection to your surgery or anything that was done with the surgery, so they can make a really objective assessment of the status of your foot now and what could be done for it. I'm sure there are a number of options, but it'd be hard for me to say what those are because it sounds like a pretty complicated problem.
Yeah.
Is it possible to have him restructuring that? His brother is also a specialist in foot surgery, but he does restructure, you know, of tendons and things like that. Is it possible that if I get a person that who can reverse that and get the pin out of my toe and can do some, you know, surgery?
Sure. And again, it sounds like you have a lot going on in your foot. I can't answer whether removing that pin would take care of your problem or not. It's something that's going to require somebody to do radiographs, to examine your foot, to watch you walk, to look at the shoes you've tried and things like that, and take all kinds of different information and put it together and come up with a reasonable plan.
Yeah. And Julia, like Lori said, I would I would go to somebody who will take a fresh look at your foot and the ankle. You want to find somebody who's an expert. They're a specialist in the foot and ankle area, and you can get a hold of the surgical report and bring that in along with you. But a fresh look, and it may be that they can reverse some things, or it may be that surgery is not indicated. But that's what you need to hear. What are the options for you?
Yeah, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Audrey in Brookfield up next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. I had a right medial meniscal tear, surgery for it on Friday. And so my question is, they said 40% was removed of this meniscus. Can that affect my activities in the future as far as cross-country skiing, jump rope, anything like that? And secondly, is there any way to regenerate any of that cartilage?
Oh, those are great questions. Will it affect your activities? Yes. Cross-country skiing, less so because it's non-impact, but rope jumping, absolutely, especially if you've lost almost half of your meniscus. So that's a substantial portion of your meniscus. So any kind of impact activities are going to be harder. In the near post-op, I would really avoid impact activities because your knee is going to take several months to readjust biomechanically to the loss of the meniscus. The meniscus and the joint surfaces work in concert with one another to provide nutrition to your joint surfaces. And because of the significant biomechanical change at your knee joint, it's going to take quite a bit of time for your knee to readjust to that. And if you move into impact activities too quickly, it can have significant long-term consequences. So I move into anything impact loading very cautiously and slowly.
Okay.
So that's that answer. And is there anything to regenerate it? Not at this point in time.
No.
Not at this point in time. So that means you want to take very good care of what you have left.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
And Audrey, also, that includes footwear and some good core strengthening to help minimize the load coming through that knee in the future. So you'll undergo a knee rehab program, but it should include somebody looking at your foot and the ankle up into the trunk and whatever muscle imbalances that can be addressed, or foot and ankle biomechanics to minimize the load on that knee should help you long term.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Carrie emailed, has severe tightness in her neck after 10 PT treatments. My PT says I should have an MRI. I'm unclear as to what would the MRI be looking for. He says there isn't anything more he can do at this point. Seems the pain comes from the very top three or four vertebrae, which themselves don't hurt, but the muscles coming from that area in my jaw, neck, and shoulders just can't be worked out. I have big muscle knots around my shoulder blades. This condition flares up and causes terrible pain for days at a time, and then the pain will dissipate, but the tightness never leaves. Any other advice or preview on what I might be looking for?
Well,
from Carrie.
The MRI, that would look, is there evidence of arthritic changes, degenerative changes in discs or facet joints? Carrie doesn't mention anything about numbness, tingling, or pain going into the arms or legs, which is a good thing because the MRI would also show the status of the spinal cord and nerves. But based on what she's describing, I guess if you're looking more, are there arthritic changes occurring? Typically you start with plain films or X-ray if that's what you're concerned about. I don't know what was done during those 10 sessions. My hope would be that there was a postural assessment, that muscle groups that might be weak were strengthened, muscle groups that were tight, impacting posture, were stretched, that manual therapy would have been attempted as well, down into the upper back, mid-back, upper back, and not just the neck. So if the physical therapist only worked on the neck, didn't do anything with posture, stretching, or strengthening, then I recommend she see a PT who specializes in people with cervical problems or neck problems. If she's having any symptoms in her hands or feet, numbness, tingling, and if she hasn't seen a physician, then she should see a physician and make sure that she mentions those items.
Listener Steve wonders if the athletic shoes with what look like little springs in the heel, are those good for us?
Well, there's not research on every specific shoe type. So, you know, are they good for you? You know, if you wear them and your feet and legs feel good, then they're probably okay. Are they something that you should run out and buy because they're better for your feet than any other kind of athletic shoe? No. No, not necessarily.
Yeah, we've had similar questions about a variety of footwear. And I think if somebody tries a shoe that's different like this, they should transition, kind of ease their way into using it, not wearing it all the time, and let their body adjust to the new components of their shoe. And then they have a better chance of maybe tolerating it.
Tom in Cedarburg, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an old injury. I had fallen on my right hip on the outside a number of years ago, and I've had quite a few cortisone shots in the bursa sac, and if I put my hand on the bone that sticks out, it's always sore, and if I walk any length of time, it hurts worse, and I'm wondering what you think I can do to help that.
Well, have you been to therapy, specific exercises for that area?
Yeah, I've gotten some stretches, and that seemed to help some, but it's not cured or anything like that.
Is your pain right on the hip bone when you start to walk, or does it go, up into your buttocks or down your leg?
Not down into the leg, but it goes across sideways to close to my tailbone and up like around that area about 6 inches, I'd say. But it does not go down into my leg.
Well, it could be that when you fell, it wasn't just an injury to your hip, but also sort of to your pelvis or sacroiliac joint.
Yeah, that's kind of what it sounds like. You would think if it was just a local hip problem, you should have been better by now. And it sounds like, again, worse with walking, not only does it stress the hip and the muscles attached to the hip, but the joints up in the pelvis or even the low lumbar spine. And so, Tom, I guess at this stage, that's what I would recommend. You get somebody who kind of looks beyond the hip and see what else they find in the neighboring areas that could have been impacted by the fall, and your body just hasn't been able to correct those, the things that happened related to the injury.
Mm. There we go. Thank you for calling. We had an email from Sarah. My sister has an arthritic bone-on-bone ankle, making it painful to walk. Over the last few years, she's done less and less activity, gained more and more weight, gotten more and more depressed about her physical situation. But Sarah says, I'm happy to say that this past weekend, she finally worked up the courage to join a fitness center and attended her first Zumba class. Dance, music, and shaking. She loved it. What you describe as tight-knit friendships in class can also be intimidating to someone new, someone who's reluctant to plunge into physical fitness. Luckily, we both attended Zumba yesterday. I was pleased to see people welcome my sister. Like so many who want to sign up for exercise, she was brave to go and deeply appreciated their friendliness. It will be the key to her success.
Yeah, she's absolutely right. And I think that's part of what's important about finding a fitness center that works for you. You know, there may be places where the culture or the crowd in that fitness facility can be intimidating. Mm-hmm. And then there are other facilities that, that Lycra is not seen anywhere in the facility. And so you need to find something that's going to be the right match for you, not only in terms of the courses and equipment that is offered, but also a little bit of the culture of the club. So it makes sense to go around and really investigate different clubs before you sign up for one.
And Lori mentioned earlier when we discussed this would be a scenario where maybe if you talk to the instructor before the first or second session, just explain, I'm new to this, I haven't done this before, and talk about precautions and ways to transition, can help with some of that anxiety. But it is a brave thing to start, and Zumba is a pretty high-level thing to start with. So yeah. I'm impressed.
Yeah,
it's very high level. And it was a lot of fun, though. The music's great.
Yes, yes it is. Yes it is.
Yeah.
Now with a sister with bone on bone, she's got to be careful with the amount of jumping and, you know, the weight bearing activities. But again, this is where working with the instructor should help, and whether there's things that can modify within the Zumba class itself, but also, you know, set up a cross training program as well.
Mm-hmm. And Pat and Madison, you have a quick question?
Yes, I have a question about orthotics.
Yeah.
I've had them for about the last 5 years, and they're rigid orthotics. And I heard on television the other day that they should actually be flexible, that you shouldn't use rigid orthotics. I'm high-arched, which is why I was originally given them.
Mm-hmm. How are they working for you?
My bunions have gotten worse over the years, but I don't know if it was because of the orthotics or not. The other question I had was when you're supposed to be walking not on cement, but preferably on something a little softer.
Yep.
But then when you're using orthotics, you're always on something hard.
Well, I mean, yes and no. It's only hard in that it controls your foot more, but your shoe is still soft. So the rigid isn't really impacting. It's really more of a biomechanical control. I would say you could use either. Whichever works for you. You can get some relatively inexpensive flexible orthotics, mid-range, $30 to $50 at places around the area, and try them out.
Give it a try. Thank you so much for calling. And Bill and Lori, thank you so much.
Boy, thank you.
Time flew. You'll be back in a month.
Yes, we will.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yes, we will. And FYI, my orthotics are rigid. I've had them for 25 years.
Lori Tynebrody and Bill Boisenault, they'll be back in a month and we'll visit with them again. Thank you for listening. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.